Since we've just started our session, I thought I would share some thoughts about our tradition of intensive practice. From the very beginning, intensive sittings like this have had a special place in Buddhist practice. The Buddha's own awakening came after a period of sustained meditation, not unlike what we're doing this week. The Buddha spent years traveling around India with a group of wandering ascetics, but finally became disenchanted with their life of self-mortification, just as he had become disenchanted with his previous life of pampered royalty. So he ventured off on his own, accepted an offering of food from a local woman, and then vowed not to rise from his seat under the Bodhi tree until he had realized enlightenment. In some versions of the story, he sat for 49 days, while others say it took only a single night. But everyone seems to agree that it was this final marathon of sitting meditation that triggered the Great Awakening that still resonates with us today. About 1,000 years later, another of our great teachers, Bodhidharma, again looked to a concerted period of sitting as the culmination of his practice. Bodhidharma is usually called our first Zen patriarch. He lived about 1,200 years ago and is credited with establishing Zen in China. And after many years of practice, Bodhidharma decided to devote himself entirely to simple sitting meditation, in his case, in a mountain cave above Shaolin Temple. One thing both these stories have in common is that these masters chose to sit alone in solitary retreat. And there are still people who practice this way today, particularly in the Theravadan traditions. In Thailand, elsewhere in Southeast Asia, it is still fairly common for monks and lay meditators to live alone in a forest hermitage for a period of days, months, even years. But in Zen, we've adopted a somewhat more formal approach to intensive practice, as we're all experiencing here now. Rather than sit by ourselves in a cave or under a tree, we sit together as a group in a temple. And rather than sitting for hours uninterrupted, we've developed a certain structure where our sitting is punctuated with services, organized meals, and talks like this. Although later this week, we'll spend a few days with many fewer such interruptions. About 400 years ago, 400 years after Bodhidharma, the great teacher Ehe Dogen brought Soto Zen to Japan. Living only 800 years ago, Dogen is a true historical figure, and we know a lot about his life and his teaching. He was something of a Buddhist prodigy, ordained at a young age, and he studied with many of the great Japanese masters of his time. Eventually, he undertook the then dangerous journey across the sea to China, and studied there with one master after another, until he had his own awakening, what he called the dropping away of body and mind. Much of what we know about Buddha and even Bodhidharma is the stuff of myth and legend, almost certainly composed long after their deaths. But not Dogen. We have many volumes of his writings, and the temple he founded, Eheiji, is where our teacher, Kobunchino Odagawa, studied. In fact, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, the founder of San Francisco Zen Center, asked Kobun to join him here in America, precisely because Kobun had learned all these Dogen-inspired rituals and practices back at Eheiji, and Suzuki wanted his help to start Asahara, the first Zen training monastery in the West. Dogen was something of a Zazen fanatic. He wrote and spoke about this many times. In one essay, he tells us, students must concentrate on one thing alone. Nothing can be gained by extensive study and wide reading. Give them up immediately. Just focus your mind on one thing. Absorb the old examples, study the actions of former Zen masters, and penetrate deeply into a single form of practice. For a Zen monk, the primary prerequisite for improvement is the practice of concentrated Zazen. Without arguing about who is clever and who is inept, who is wise and who is foolish, just do Zazen. You will then naturally improve. And this is very typical. The volumes of Dogen's teachings remain widely studied in Japan and here. In many respects, Dogen's teachings are no different from Bodhidharma's or the Buddha's. His focus, like theirs, is on our basic practice. Although this inconceivable Dharma is abundant, in each person, he explained, it is not actualized without practice, and it is not experienced without realization. But Dogen was also a big believer in temple life. In addition to his famous essays and lectures on Zazen, he wrote extensively about how to operate a training temple, including a particularly famous volume of instructions just for temple cooks. He wrote, "The assembly of students in the hall should blend, like milk and water, to support the activity of the way." And then went on to say, "The support of you and your practice by this assembly of students surpasses that which was given by your father and mother. Your father and mother are temporarily close to you in birth and death, but this assembly of students is your companion in the way of enlightenment for all time." It is a great blessing to have a temple like Jokoji, where we can come together and practice. Zen sounds so simple, just sitting, facing a wall, realizing our true nature. And yet it can be exceedingly difficult. For some reason, as Dogen knew, it is easier to do this practice together. There is something very special about sitting in a group like this, about hearing not only your own breath, but also the breathing of your neighbor, about bowing together, chanting together. And this is our job here this week, not only to practice toward our own realization, but to support each other, to support all the students who have assembled here. Coming together in this way is a rare and valuable opportunity. We are very fortunate that Koban and his original students built this temple for us and left it to us as a home for our practice. And so we should not let this great and rare opportunity slip away. As Dogen went on to say, "Now is the time for the fire on your head to be wiped out. Is it not sad to waste this time concerning yourself with secular affairs? The impermanent is unreliable. No one knows when and where this dew-like existence will drop into the grass." Before we return to our silent meditation this afternoon and evening, I wanted to say one more thing about intensive sitting. The first teaching of the Buddha, after his great awakening, concerned the middle way, the path that avoids extremes. As I said a few moments ago, he had been trying all sorts of ascetic practices, wandering around India, but he realized that this self-mortification was really no better than the self-indulgence he had practiced as a prince. The right path, he concluded, was a middle way between excessive self-hate and excessive self-love. It is very easy to lose sight of this middle way when we are on retreat. As many of us talked about in our study group, these intensive periods of sitting can feel like asceticism at times. Our bodies start to ache, our knees and backs rebel against the endless stillness. When this happens, our bodies can start to feel like an obstacle rather than a vehicle. We want to beat our bodies into submission. We can begin to veer from this middle way often to the weeds of self-hate. So in addition to supporting each other, we must also remember to support ourselves. Sitting like this is difficult. And while it is good at times to push ourselves and to seize this rare opportunity to practice together, we must also remember to take care, to take a moment to stretch when we rise, to lie down in our rooms if we need to when we have a break, to sleep when we close for the day and give ourselves energy for tomorrow. And if our sitting causes too much pain, to try a different position, or perhaps even a chair. We are blessed with two teachers here at this session, Michael and Peter, and so please also reach out to them if you require assistance. I have the honor of serving as Shuso, or head student, during this period, and so please also let me know if there's anything I can do, or if you would like to speak about your practice. The Buddha taught us that life is suffering, but our practice is not to be mired in suffering. Our practice is to transcend it. This body is our only vehicle in this life. Let us all use it wisely, even as we sail it toward that unknown shore.